Hey, everybody. I'm Justin Gray, the CTO of Toolpath. And here with me today is
Uriel Eisen of Arda and also Austere Manufacturing.
Thanks for coming onto the podcast with me, Uriel.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me on. Yeah, so I'm excited to chat through this.
I asked you to come on today so that we could go pretty nerdy into Kanban. And my path here was a little bit unique. I was in the middle of a webinar or prepping for a webinar for Toolpath with Ben, and we broke a bunch of end mills. And I think I don't remember exact numbers anymore. I think I had like three in the drawer or something, and we broke two. I was down to my last one. And then like it was fine. We had the tooling we needed for the webinar, but then I had to go reorder it. And it was like in the moment, like such a big hassle for me to remember where I ordered this from, eBay or Amazon. And I was like, you know what? It's time for me to Kanban. And so I went to check out Arda, and implement this, but I ran into a whole bunch of sort of, I don't want to call them gotchas. I ran into a bunch of places where I felt like I didn't understand what I was doing and how to do this properly. So I'm hoping we can just go through it today and I'll ask a bunch of questions and you can tell me what I'm doing right or wrong.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yep. Oh, I was just going to say, I think you're not alone in that. I think, you know, the practical, how, where the rubber meets the road and kind of how to roll it out, where to focus your time. I feel like that's, it's something that took us a while to figure out.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like on its face, Kanban should be like so dead simple that it should be almost effortless to implement. But then when I actually went to it, stymied isn't the right word, but I just didn't feel comfortable like I was going to get the benefits out of the system.
Hmm.
So, for anybody who doesn't know, why don't you just explain like the most basic Kanban system and maybe just a brief history of where it came from?
Sure. So Kanban, means signal in Japanese. It kind of came out of the, Toyota production system in their attempt to, streamline their operations, reduce work in process, but always have what they need, at every station. And so on a practical level, how it's implemented in most machine shops is if you have a bunch of stuff right now, it's sort of ambiguous exactly when you should reorder it. And so everyone's sort of using mental effort when they open a drawer. They're like, oh, I think we still have enough, you know, if they're really present, right? And they're sort of judging that by like what work they have on the horizon, and also how much the thing costs and, you know, how much of a hassle it is to reorder. Cause as you said, like maybe you don't remember where you got it. So you're like, I'll do it tomorrow. And that ambiguity is all eliminated if you just take a physical card and tuck it into the inventory at the point when you want to trigger that reorder. And that's at its most basic, what it comes down to. What's convenient about that card is it doesn't really disrupt your work as you're going through the inventory. If you hit the card, all we're asking you to do, and by we, I mean Toyota or someone, I don't know, is, you know, take it out, drop it in a bin, and then at the end of the day, you can go through that bin. Now, once you have that card, it becomes convenient to write information on it that just makes the reordering process more efficient. So if you 3D print, you know, bins to hold your end mills or something like that, you can also trigger work on your 3D printer. It doesn't just need to be procurement. But in that case, you know, it could be convenient to have your pre-sliced file available when you pick up the card, or at least sort of the address, you know, your directory of where you have that file stored, so you don't have to go waste, you know, 5-10 minutes. And the net effect of putting that in place just tends to be you stop stocking out, you stop having to run around the shop to check on things, that kind of thing. That wasn't very brief, but hopefully that's
The 3D printer file one was, I heard you guys talking about that on Incremental, and that was like, oh, absolutely, that, like, that saves me so much time. So as a system, it sounds like, I mean, so very basic. I make a card and I put it in the drawer. And then when I get to the point in the bin where I have to, where I receive the card, I drop those cards in another bin, which I guess is a key point. I have to have some kind of centralized location or more than one centralized location to drop the order cards into.
Yeah, so we've sort of iterated on this for sure. I started using Kanban at Austere Manufacturing, read about it in a book. We ran out of a 3-cent plastic bag and couldn't ship a $3,000 order, which was a bummer. But that's really just one example of a problem I'm sure everyone has had. And even if you're not having the problem, you're not having the problem because someone or many people are sort of actually wasting quite a bit of time trying to stay ahead of the problem. And so what we've found is, yeah, so we have a central, like in our current state, and it's gone through a few versions, but in its current state, we have a station for sort of handling those external orders. So it has one bin, as you said, that's like, what do we need to order? Then because we're using Arda to process them, we have a second bin of things that have been scanned into the Arda cart. And then a third bin for when they're ordered and waiting on receiving. Now, that third bin, because we use, like, we don't place any orders without a card. And so, I mean, unless it's for like a, I don't know, a CNC or like a sandblaster or something, right? Which we don't have Kanban to have. So then that third bin just started having a lot of cards in it. And so now we've added a grid of bins near where we do receiving. For our most common vendors. That way, when an item comes in from McMaster Car, you're not going through this big wad of cards. You just pick up the ones from the McMaster Car bin. So that's kind of how we've been working it. Before we were using Arda, we just had one less bin because it was either wasn't ordered or was ordered. And that's when we were just doing like Sharpie and an index card.
I don't know why you just broke my brain a little bit. I was at Send Cut Send last week, and they had one ma'am, and three more got delivered. And
wow.
Now I feel like it's my mission to get the Send Cut Send guys to build a Kanban card for ma'ams.
yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Like, put the card on like the last pallet of the fourth ma'am, and the first time you have to put that pallet, then you have to buy another ma'am. I feel like that has to happen now. That would be amazing.
I think that's definitely something that needs to happen.
Okay, so I am effectively the only person doing ordering in my shop. Toolpath has kind of a weird shop. It's an R&D machine shop. We use it to test out machining strategies and make sure our software is working properly. And most of the time, it's really just me here, and about half the time, we have Ben here as well. But he doesn't do that much ordering. He does some. And that's where I ran into my first hiccup with the Kanban stuff. I started making some cards. I tried out your free Kanban card generator, which is really good. But the cards are too big for my tooling drawer. So I was like rolling them up and folding them up.
Totally.
And then I didn't like know how to connect the dots for him. So I was like, oh, well, I'm still just doing all the ordering anyway. Is that the right way to do it? Should one person be doing the ordering? Does Kanban make it so that anybody can do the ordering, or maybe Arda helps with that?
I think I've seen all of the above. I love the saying that I heard from Ryan Tierney at Seating Matters. Dual ownership is no ownership. Just with everything. But in deploying Arda at a bunch of companies now, we definitely have started making the recommendation more and more that one person should own scanning and ordering. That doesn't mean people can't chip in, but that if they do chip in and there's a failure, it still falls on that person to sort of make sure the work is getting done, make sure people are trained, etc. It's been my experience that if people are trained, or once people are trained, that it's pretty easy to share the workload because it's very visual, right? Like if Ben comes into the shop and there's still some in the to order bin, because all the information is on the card, he knows where you're going to buy it, how many to get. And so it's very easy then for him to execute the order. And then it's very easy for you to know that he did that because now the card is in the ordered bin, right? So sharing the work there, I've seen is pretty easy. That said, we now do recommend that one person kind of own it.
Own the ordering. What about creating cards?
So for creating cards, there's a my favorite way of implementing Kanban and the way we did it in my shop is deciding that nothing's going to get ordered without a card. And there's one obvious exception here for shops that are doing like job shop work, which is materials, right? Now, if you do work out of a common sized aluminum bar, then you might Kanban that size stock, raw stock coming in. But most likely you're ordering kind of custom materials for that specific job. But all like anything that you expect to order again, just when you realize you need to order it, instead of just ordering it, you make a card. And so that takes the task from being, we see orders typically take 4 to 10 minutes to execute an order per item without Kanban. With Kanban, I'm trying to think what that number would be. Arda brings it down to, you know, like a minute per item per order. And so I always tell people, like, your ROI is 1 to 2 orders.
But how do you create the card, though, is what I'm getting at. So, like, I'm doing the order. And
so
I'm responsible for it. Do I still walk him through Arda and he goes in and creates a card? What's the right way?
So we've been playing around with this. We've been playing around with this a little bit. One of the things that's really advantageous, I would say, about Kanban is that you actually don't need complete information on the card when you create it, right? So, like, if Ben realized, oh, we're running low on the grease for the CNC, you just write grease, like CNC grease, on the top of an index card. Doesn't need to look like anything, and drop it in the two order bin. Ben has no idea where the grease is ordered. Maybe he does. I don't know. And now you come into the shop and you're like, oh, we do need to order that. Okay, where do I order it? I'm going to order it from XY vendor. Okay, now that I already have all the information in front of me, I'm just going to make a real card. I say a real card, just like include more information on it. That also goes for your minimums, where it's stored. Like when we do implementations, sometimes people get kind of bogged down in like, oh, well, our shop isn't super organized, so let's put this off a while we get our shelving dialed in, because we want to go like shelf A, you know, or rack A, shelf 2, bay 4, and get like super granular. And we're like, okay, on the shop floor today, if I ask someone like, hey, can you go get me like wood screws? Do they consult a database? No, they just know where the wood screws live. They walk over there and grab them. So whatever the colloquial term is for that area of the shop, you can put that in. You can leave it blank. You can, you know, big blue shelf, or you can just say like woodworking area, or, you know, in this case, like tool crib or CNC one, or like you don't have to get granular. I always recommend like less is more, right? You have a lot of fields on a card, but you don't need to fill them up. And just the simple act of creating a card, even if you don't write a minimum on it, suddenly creates a whole workflow where over time you will sort of converge on having good data and up-to-date data is what we found.
So is that acceptable practice to make like partial cards? It's like just order this thing and I'm not even going to – actually, I found the minimum number. Like I found all of the fields on there a little overwhelming when I first started. I was like, I don't actually know what my minimum number is. I don't know what the bag, the lot size, like I didn't know what all the fields meant, nor do I know how to size any of those things properly. I didn't think about just skipping them and shoving a card with a URL in the drawer and being like, okay, I'll deal with the rest of this later. That's interesting.
Yeah. 100. Yeah. I mean, that's great feedback, and we should definitely probably promote that more, because I feel like, you see 5 fields, you're like, all right, well, I need all 5 filled out before it's worth making a card. My experience was definitely like I ran this for, you know, 3-4 years without any software, and it was just a Sharpie and index cards. And what I found was every time I placed a card as a business owner, that was a thing that was lifted off of my mental load of like sort of in the back of your head, like, oh shit, I need to like tomorrow, I need to make sure I have this tingly sense that we're going to run out of, you know, it could be like, I don't have a backup probe tip, or like, I think the batteries, I haven't changed the batteries in the probe for a while, and I don't think we have any in the shop. Like, I better order those. Like, all that stuff just starts to drop off, and you don't need a vendor, you don't need anything on the card for it to function well. They just are sort of enabling. And also over time, you start to realize how easy it is to undervalue the cost of not having it, and just sort of be responsive to the price tag, because that's really obvious, like, lost revenue. But like, as a shop owner or as a business owner, your time is worth, let's say, $1,000 per hour doing the right tasks, right? Like, there's some small section of tasks that's worth a huge amount of money per hour. And anytime you're not doing those, you know, it's not exactly lost revenue, but I think it's just worth
your rate, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why you made me think of this, and I don't know how to execute it, but some sort of time-based card would be amazing, like a color change or something.
Interesting. And how would you want, like, does that mean, like, when you see it out in the shop, you are?
Yes. Like, our machines don't get run every day. And so I want to make sure the batteries that you talked about are the ones that made me think about it. Like, oh, this is a preventative maintenance thing. And when this card turns red, somebody has to change those batteries.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know how you would execute that at all. Some sort of digital card would have to exist. But it's a really powerful idea. For us, it would be like, hey, nobody has turned this machine on in 3 days and the coolant should probably be cycled. Those kinds of things.
So that is typically like just to continue pulling on the Toyota production system, the, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the term Kamishibai board. We talk about it in depth on my I do a podcast, Incremental, about those topics. The Kamishibai board are more like time-based regular items that need to get kind of executed. To be fully transparent here, we have a Kamishibai board and have not really, like, our compliance is not good. So,
right. For this one specifically, it's because it's not necessarily a regular interval. Like, if Ben's been run, like, I just may not know. Ben may have run the machine on Monday. And so it's fine to not, anyway.
Yeah.
That was just a side note. I didn't expect that Kanban solved that problem. I was thinking about trying to change cards somehow, though. Like time-based chip cards.
Super, super cool idea.
But back onto the main subject. So the next thing, so I went onto your free card generator, I started generating cards, but like I said, the cards are a little too big because I have very like narrow drawers for my end mills. And I know about the two bin system where you put like your basically your main stock in one bin and then the card and then another bin of like your minimum quantity. I don't have space for a two bin system in my end mill drawer.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Yeah, for sure.
What do I do?
Sure. Yeah. So there's sort of two questions. One is the size thing. We do offer many different size cards in like the full version. Right now the free version doesn't include that, but it's great feedback and maybe we should. So I'll pass that on to the team. But you know, one option is just taking the card and folding it and then laminating it. So some of the information ends up on the back, but it's still like a physical trigger to do, to place that order. And then
laminate it. Why do I miss these like stupidly simple solutions?
You know, it took me a while I saw it at a customer and I was like, oh yeah, that is, I guess, possible. Interesting. Totally. And then in terms of the two bin system, I mean, really the goal is important, which is to eliminate ambiguity as much as possible, right? Like if you put the card near your end mills, it is still convenient in that to indicate to someone, you know, someone else on the team or to you, to your future self that an order needs to be placed, you can just move the card. That said, it's very easy to miss that cue and forget to move it because it's not blocking you. So that's really the goal. And there's a lot of ways of achieving that goal. What I've done in my tool crib, which is, you know, the same problem you ran into, I did a two bin system sort of front to back, but that's because I run production and I basically stock 21 tools. That's it. Right. But, friends of mine who also run Arda, they just tuck whatever minimum they need into a plastic bag and then stick the card in the plastic bag. And so I heard the term a while ago, con bin, where like you actually affix the Kanban card to a bin and then you pass the whole bin back to the previous station to refill it with stuff. And now I've been joking about con bag as well. And then I do use this same trick on like our assembly station. We have a little screw bit that wears out. And so every now and then we want to change it. And so we just have a card with one bit in a little plastic bag. And what I've started doing is actually leaving the card in the bag. And then you like take out the minimum inventory, drop it in your bin. And then I just put the whole bag with the card in our two order bin. And then when more comes in, you just tuck it back into that bag and deliver it back into the bins. Are you using like shallower bins or something?
We have our
Gridfinity?
Sort of none of the above, because of course I had to do it my own way. I don't remember why we didn't use Gridfinity in the moment anymore, but we basically like we have Harbor Freight toolboxes. And the shallow bins are both really expensive, and I'm weirdly cheap about stuff like that. I would spend more if we were like using everything every day. But anyway, we made some 3D printable ones that like fit exactly in a 22-inch wide drawer. And so they're basically shallow bins with movable dividers.
Yep.
They're 3D printable.
Yeah. And I will say like one thing that I've sort of started realizing just about my machine shop organization in general is I think I over index on space efficiency for the mechanical aspects of what you're storing,
right,
and under indexing on the requirements for information to be displayed and information to be transferred. And even like it's interesting, like sandblasting cabinet, like I want to display SOPs, but the manufacturer didn't accommodate SOPs, right? Best practice is to have SOPs on everything, right? Not that we do, but it's just interesting that people, I think often people aren't really thinking about what information also goes along with this. Like, you know, when you have like an alarm clock and you have to hold these three buttons for 6 seconds to do X, Y, and Z function, but it doesn't say that anywhere. It just says it in the manual. But like, are you going to keep the manual by the alarm clock? No. So either you're smart and you like put a label on it, like my wife, right? Or every time you have to like Google it or go try to figure out where, like try different sets of buttons.
You have a young child, right?
A very young child.
Put that little piece of information into the bin of things that you will one day have to describe to your child that they will just not be able to understand. They'll be like, what do you mean? It should be my tablet. Like I just turn on the alarm. What are you talking about? Yeah.
It's an AR. Yeah. I just look at the device and I can click the eye icon right above it.
Not having exactly the buttons you need labeled the way they need to be is something they just won't understand. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Right. Because So anyway, that is all to say that I am contemplating moving my tooling to a deeper drawer so we can just use a two bin system where they're stacked.
Right.
Because it's just so easy.
I guess a version of that would be I could like either make a bigger card and use that as the divider, like basically like two end mills, then a card and then end mills, so that like, you know, there are end mills underneath that card. You just have to move the card to get to them. Okay. Yeah. I like that. I also can see the wisdom. I mean, I've been in a couple of shops that have like five toolboxes full of end mills. And so like the thought of expanding that to 10 toolboxes full of end mills or like making them twice as tall seems, I don't know, out of reach. How much of end mills get used on a regular basis though? Like, you know?
Totally. That said, I think actually, I'm glad you brought that up. I think a lot of people if you go through the carbide in someone's shop, right, there's a very good chance that you're like, oh, you only have one of these left, and they're like, oh, well, we ordered it for this one job and so we probably won't need it. And it's like, well, okay, so should we throw it in the trash? And it's like, well, no, it was, you know, it was $65, so we might need it. So, and I think the issue there is that if you just sort of rationalize the different outcomes, right, if you're counting on it being there and you program a job where you're going to use that and then it breaks, like, so now you're overnighting something, like from what I've seen, either you want the thing there or you don't want it there. Right. I think that middle ground is very tempting, and I think it does have its place, but I would definitely separate that out, like physically, right? Like, here's our production tooling. We always keep this stuff in stock. And then we have this non-production weird stuff. We use it on our manual machine, or like you try to do one feature for some one-off job. And I don't know, like, I think it's worth really separating those two. Even so, like, having, we have customers who have, you know, 500 plus tools that are all Kanban, and they are just like, yeah, if we are counting on having them in stock, then they're in stock, you know, and we know we can count on them. And we know that if the programmer pulls them from our library and then we go to run them, that we actually have enough there.
Okay. You and I need to do some sort of in-person workshop on this. We just debuted a feature on Toolpath called the Tool Recommendation Engine. And I've been wrestling with this exact issue in my brain for months now. So the Toolpath, like, one of its key features is that it'll look at your part and tell you, like, exactly what tools from your tool library you can use to make that part.
Awesome.
But you can also, like, add vendor libraries now, and it'll say, like, hey, you could make this part if you bought one of these tools. And so now I'm thinking about, like, all of that collection of, like, random carbide as, like, another vendor library, but just, like, a very high availability. Like, I can buy it in quotes for free, right? But if I'm, like you said, if I'm going to use this for a job, I never have less than two of any end mill I'm going to need for a job. So that should trigger me to go buy one more of that end mill, because I'm now going to use this for a job. And even if that means that I can go ahead and get started, I don't know that, like, I just may have to stop if I break the end mill.
Right. And I'm sure you guys have thought about this way more deeply than I have. But I wonder, and maybe you already do this, but sort of, here's the tools you can use, and then if there is a feature that we can't find a tool in your library, then we're recommending.
That's how it
works. That kind of makes sense.
That's how it works.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, so then it's not just, like, arbitrarily expanding the number you need on hand.
You can actually have, like, three levels of priority of tools in your own shop. So, like, the way most people think about it is, like, core tools in the machine all the time, and then standard tools would be, like, built next to the machine, ready to go in.
Yeah.
And then, like, tools in a drawer that I own and I'm fine using, like, I have them Kanban'd, but I have to, like, assemble a tool for it. And so Toolpath will try to, like, prioritize the ones in the machine first, and then the, you know, first, second,
third. That's awesome.
And then only then, if it, like, really can't find a tool, will it look in the recommendation engine.
That's awesome.
We haven't yet assigned priorities to the recommendation engine. That is coming, because you may want to use your in-stock sort of carbide store of random tools. So I'm, like, now super excited to think about how to deal with that. Like, that says those should be Kanban'd, but just with, like, a minimum order or a minimum quantity of one, I guess. And then as soon as you use that, you have to buy one more, or however many more you feel in that moment, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's also just a practical mix of, like, the cost and space. Like, if you're ordering eighth inch end mills, right, $12-15 per end mill, and they're tiny. I think you're more willing, and it's actually more rational because they're easy to break, to keep, you know, more than just one. Right. But then if you have, like, a big chunky thing that's $300, you kind of don't want to be sitting on five of those.
Right.
Because it also, like, it won't fit in your drawer. Which actually, I don't want to forget to mention this. The physical logistics of your shop are really important when sizing the numbers on your card, like when filling out the minimum and reorder. Because if you are, let's say you have a Schaller bin or homebrew 3D printed bin, when you get down to two, you go, like, oh, we get a bulk discount at 10. 10 comes in, like, they don't all fit in the bin. So now you're putting some somewhere else. Now you'll either forget they're there or always think, like, oh yeah, I have more backups. It is way more efficient to just go, like, when we're down to two, we're going to order the amount that we know will fit into the bin, right? Or down to two, we'll order two. But just, like, actually considering and including, like, what fits on your shelf. Like, we see this often where people don't like running out, so they order too much, and then it doesn't fit on the shelf. Then they're spending labor hours,
right?
You know, searching, storing it elsewhere. So yeah, just, like, getting the mechanical logistics right,
I think,
saves time.
I think the labor hours, it's obvious, and you always talk about this when I listen on your podcast, about how it's saving labor. But I think that connection gets lost in the like implementation of Kanban. Like in the moment, the reason I like finally bit the bullet and was like, I need to Kanban was because I was frustrated trying to remember where I needed to order this stupid end mill while I was in the middle 100%. Of something like very demanding. But 90% right. of the time, like I'm not in the middle of something super demanding when I'm ordering. But like you said, if I can reduce my average order time from 4 minutes to 1 minute or whatever it is, that time yeah. adds up over time. And everywhere else in my shop, like the lean benefits, I value them very highly. But it, for some reason, ordering the time it took to place an order didn't occur to me. Didn't feel like it was wasted time.
Yeah, I think it feels creative and also like you are achieving a goal. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And just, yeah.
My goal of driving my bank account to zero. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So minimum order quantity, minimum quantity and minimum order quantity. And I've heard you talk a little bit about like, well, if the manufacturer supplies them in a pack of five, then just order them in a pack of five or whatever. Don't like waste time like buying, or if your minimum order quantity or your minimum quantity in the bin is two, don't buy five and then count out two. Like you're just wasting time. So I guess the flip side to that would be willing to design your storage around your minimum order quantities, like make your bin big enough for 10 end mills, right? Like,
100%. And actually, Devin of Lichen Precision has thought about the end mill or really just cutting tools in a job shop much deeper than I have. And something he said that I don't know, made a lot of sense to me. I think there's a temptation to organize by category of item.
Yeah.
But actually, once you have a dialed inventory system, not inventory system, but just like a very, you know, this tool goes here type of system, and there's a way to find it and retrieve it. And he describes it pretty well. So I won't try, but instead dividing by the physical sort of dimensions of the item, like you're saying. So like, I think one of the things I've run into is you lay out a drawer with 4-inch long bins, and then you have that one end mill that in the box it comes in is like 4 1/4 right. inches, and it doesn't, you know, and you're like, ah, this is annoying. So I think just planning for that, to your point, and having like a drawer that's for all your small tools rather than for like all your aluminum tools. And then you're like, well, this one is sort of for aluminum, but also sometimes I use it for steel. Like it's my helical chamfer tool or right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. And then there's exceptions, but really there aren't really exceptions to what the size of the item is, I would say. So that just feels like a pretty pretty clear way of doing it.
I was really like really, really into the episode where you guys were talking about Devin's organization system and how he just sort of has a spreadsheet and tells you to go to bin 7 when you're looking for this.
Yeah.
And I see the pros and cons of that system. Obviously, like as soon as the spreadsheet that's tracking where everything is wrong, then you have to like redo everything. right. You have to like take a day and like inventory your carbide. Right. But,
why would you have to inventory it?
Just because like now if everything is organized randomly then the spreadsheet somehow gets out of sync with where things are in the drawer, then you can't lose your ability to find anything. So somebody has to go look at the drawers and like update the spreadsheet to be correct again. The inventory like 1/8 inch end mill.
Yeah, I don't think he's – right. I don't think he's run into that problem, but I'm not sure. But yeah, the hygiene would be important
there. But what I think is important to note, because I went through 20 minutes of thinking about this myself, is that Kanban is sort of orthogonal or independent of that. Like store your end mills however you want and save time for storage. Right. But Kanban just layers the cards still go where the cards go. And so you don't have to solve both those problems at the same time. I'm not super happy with our end mill storage right now. It is organized in like what would seem like a rational aluminum and by size, and I run into a problem. But I don't have to fix that at the same time that I'm implementing Kanban. Like I'll just do them independently.
I'm glad you said that. I think the worst thing I see is people putting off improvements because they want to do other stuff first. And it's like, we all know that's not going to happen.
Right.
Every now and then it does. Like, that's not always true. But I know for me, when I'm like, oh yeah, I will organize this, but first I want to design like a new This is one that's top of mind for me. I've been meaning to design a new bin system for our end mills for the past month and a half to have a more convenient place to tuck the cart.
Right.
Instead of just being like, I have these bins, like, let me just do it, do all the work and then iterate on that. But yeah, no, they don't have to happen independently. And in fact, what I just posted a little while ago after getting this question a bunch on our Instagram, just showing different ways of attaching Kanban to things, because I think people think it needs to be pretty rigid. And one of the things that got me into it to begin with was just how easy it was. And you could get pretty creative. Like, you know, if you have a bottle of Simple Green, for example, you can just like put a rubber band, like punch a hole in the laminated card and then rubber band it around the top.
Right.
Like for paint, you can take E-tape and sort of E-tape it to your bottle of paint at the height-ish where you want to trigger it. If you have, yeah, a bunch of tools in a drawer, like you can just clip the card, or like, I don't know, fasteners, you can just sort of clip the card to the last bag of fasteners. Like you don't have to. A 3D printed replacement parts would be another good example. Like if you just rubber band the box to a card and drop it all back into your disorganized drawer, now you will remember to reorder the nozzle when you replace the nozzle, right? Instead of it being like, oh shit, I forgot.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like starting really dirty, like you're saying, just like orthogonal to the process of your ideal shop. My co-founder, who is not from a manufacturing background, has like said, like, I've never toured anyone's shop where they haven't apologized for the mess. So everyone always wants it to be better.
I'm going to bring you guys to my shop and not apologize. I'll make sure it's spotless before that, just so that he can't say comment. That anymore.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, no, we'd love to come out and talk through it.
Okay, so I'm going to do Arda. I'm going to take this. I'm not even going to worry about order quantity. I'm going to go on your website. I'm not going to fill out the order quantity. I'm just going to put like some sort of sensible title for the thing. I'm going to grab a picture, which sometimes takes longer than it should, but you guys have a nice feature where you'll pull in the picture from Amazon or McMaster, I think. Right. So, now let's talk about like where this QR code or where the information for ordering should go and a little bit about convergence. Cause that was another thing you talked about with Arda that really hit home for me about like when you design a system to keep it minimal. So if I'm not using Arda, let's say I'm rolling my own Kanban system, I could write order from Amazon on the card, right? Or I could print it and put the actual link on there. And then maybe I have a digital copy of the card to copy paste the link from, which is kind of Arda-esque. But what if those two things get out of sync? Talk about the convergence process and why that's important and how you designed Arda around that. Because for me, that was very insightful.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. So I guess like first the problem, I ran Kanban, as I mentioned, on index cards with Sharpies, right? Hugely transformative, but also then sort of left me wanting. And I think the part that was difficult for me was exactly what you're talking about. So I have a link on the card. Awesome. I just scan this QR code. I feel great about, you know, taking the 10 minutes to create a QR code and stick it to my handwritten Sharpie card, right? But then the fifth time I go and scan it, it's like link not found, right? So now I have to then, but now I'm in sort of in the moment of like, well, I need to check out and like finish this order. And so now I have a new link. Does it make it back onto that card? And I was finding that the friction was just sort of high enough that the answer to that question was sometimes, right? And so suddenly, like you're saying, I've taken the time to put a QR code on the card, but now it's not always up to date. And then I don't know if you found this, but like if you make a rule and you break it sometimes, it's almost worse than not having it. So that was the issue I ran into. And then simultaneously, things like vendors who take orders over email, it was hard to build that into a QR code. And so that's sort of why I wanted a digital database. I just happened to be lucky and have a friend who could whip one up for me. And he just kind of did it as a friend over a weekend, delivered it. It was trash. And that was like V1 of art. It just didn't work. Like he didn't understand what I was trying to do. He had never worked on a shop floor. So like we kind of went back and forth for 6 months to refine it. And a lot of that was just about reducing the friction so that we were capturing data as people were finding it, which starts to, there's this tipping point where then that database is the single source truth instead of sort of the ground truth. Our third co-founder, Miguel, talks about, and I'm sure it's not a Miguel original, but like that reality is stubborn, right? Like, yeah. If people talk about like a digital twin, reality wins every time. Right. So yeah. A lot of shops have an ERP, but then if you go on the shop floor, the ERP says produce this and we have X amount in stock. But then the like smart employees are actually making the business work, because if they followed the ERP, it would not work.
Okay.
And like, this is just super common, right? Like if you call someone and say like, how many do you have in stock? If they're Amazon, they're probably pretty committed to the number that the computer says, but a lot of people would be like, let me just walk in the back and make sure that that's right.
Right, yeah.
And so just having the card there, when you scan it, we made a decision. The free tool, the link takes you right to your item, just to make the ordering process efficient. We made a decision early on with Arda to actually have it bring you back into the database and then just make that tool, rather than an added step, make the ordering through Arda 10x faster. So now it is the most desirable way to do the work is to go back into Arda. And the big advantage is if everyone in your company is always in Arda at the point of purchase, if the link changes, if they find a new vendor that has a much better price, it's so easy to just copy and paste that data back in. Or if you go to your normal preferred vendor and they're out of quarter.
That's the key point. The card does not change, right? So the link on the card is to Arda. And then whoever's ordering in the moment just updates the Arda page, and everything always takes you back to Arda. Arda's helping you order anyway, so why wouldn't you do that? Right, okay. And so that's the difference between like a convergent system versus just a native like homegrown Kanban system where the link takes you to Amazon or McMaster. That's still helpful, but now you have this added friction of, oh, I have to go reprint the card or update the card.
Yeah. And the things that you might need to update are like the minimum and the quantity, but we often just do that with a Sharpie and it takes a second,
right?
Instead of reprinting.
Right.
That said, driving down the friction of reprinting is also high on the list. So I'm trying to source a durable card material that's printable in a home printer, which if anyone's listening who knows how to do that, please send me an email or contact me.
I will, after we get done recording, I'll see if I can hook you up with somebody who knows something about this topic. They may or may not have an answer, but I know somebody in the label printing business. So,
that would be great. Yeah. We have one option that seems maybe viable. It's only compatible with laser printers. But it sort of has this like weird shadow around some of the text still. So I don't know if that's settings on our end or I don't know what it is. We're trying to fix it. It's still honestly better than, better than having to laminate. My brother said something funny which stuck with me, which is that it's nicer to sleep in a bed that you wet. And that is just to say that if we recommend this to customers and it's shadow, like how there's a shadow, they might be like, well, we don't like the shadow.
Right, yeah.
but if they found the solution, they'd be like, yeah, it has a shadow, but I don't like laminating.
Right.
So we'll just use that.
Yeah. I think that brings us to like a pretty critical topic, which is, and you mentioned exceptions a little bit. You said like, if you break the rule, then it might as well not be a rule. There's some truth to that, but I think like, it depends how often you have to break it, right? Every rule has an exception. So do I have to laminate every card? Is that a rule? Or does everything have to be Kanban? Is that a rule? Stock, for example, like if I'm a job shop, I'm probably not Kanbaning like random stock I have to order for every job. I might Kanban my soft jaws though, right? So how do you think through like when to make exceptions to the rule and when not to? Like, oh, I need a card and the laminator's broken. Do I make a card anyway and then reprint it later?
Right. So in terms of laminating, like that's not really a rule. It's just when your card gets coolant on it and
right
then you're like, okay, I wish I'd laminated it. But in terms of that, I think actually, yes, I think being comfortable with creating rules for part of your process is actually critical. There's a great story in one of Shigeo Shingo's books about he saw a manufacturing line where at the end of it, they had two people who were basically picking the component out from the remnant. It was like a punching process or something. And he's like, why don't you have a machine that's doing that? And they're like, well, we had a machine doing it, but it missed like 20% of the blanks. So he was like, okay, bring that machine back, put it on the line, and then have one person taking out what it missed, right? The 20%. And so now you just saved yourself a whole person. You cut the job in half. So I would say that something I've been thinking about a lot lately is that I think smart people, including myself, maybe I'm smart, maybe not. Like
your wife.
Sort of through, what's that?
Well, ask your wife. She can decide.
Yeah, that's a good call. Anyway, develop an annoying habit of like when someone comes up with an idea, sort of finding where that idea doesn't work. And I think in business, there's huge power in actually finding ideas that work broadly, even if they don't work everywhere. But the critical part is to have clear boundaries on that. And so the reason I say that is because things like work holding, a lot of shops don't standardize on work holding because there's sort of this background feeling that like, how could you standardize? There's so many different things that I might want to hold. So they sort of treat everything as ambiguous instead of saying like going, okay, we're going to standardize on this vice. And actually doing that is going to save us so much time across the shop. And we're also going to have all these other vices for when that doesn't work. But when it doesn't work is like, you know, 10% of the time or 5% of the time.
There's another strong intersection with toolpath. Actually, I did not expect this. I swear, listeners, this was not scripted. We have stock libraries you can define, and in there you define like your X, Y oversize for your stock. You drop your part in.
Yeah.
And then you can define your Z oversize. But I one too many times ordered stock that was too thin to hold in the vise. Cause I was going quickly. And so now you tell toolpath like what your minimum grip stock height is. And that kind standardizes the whole process. So like basically op one for everything all the time is always just held in a talon grip. And if I'm making a part, I don't even have to think about it anymore. If toolpath told me this is the stock I need, then I know that there's enough grip stock for me to hold that.
That's smart.
And of course there are exceptions. Right. It can be a big piece or something you need to hold in a vacuum or tape and glue for one op, but like 90 or 80% of the time, I just let toolpath choose my stock and I have standardized on like, this is how much grip stock I need. And sometimes that means toolpath tells me to order a little bit extra material, but because I'm following some standardized rule and I could have snuck it into a 5/8, but like, I don't care. I don't think about that anymore.
Right. And like, what are you paying your programmers?
Right.
And like actually rationalizing the cost of that extra material compared to the cost of every single job that comes through the door, spending 5 or 10 extra minutes trying to like squeeze it into a smaller thing or crashing your end mill because it nicks the top of your talon grip.
I swear, never.
yeah. I have one, you know, I'm always glad that like righty tighty, lefty loosey, and that I have like a clockwise spindle because, like, you know, have you ever like decked off across a screw and it doesn't back out into your end mill?
I never thought of that. I mean, yes, I have done that, but I mean, no, never have I ever done that. But wow, I never thought of that.
I've had it where if you come across one edge, it will unscrew it, but if you come across the whole thing, it will screw it down so it doesn't chip your end mill, which is nice.
Note to self, Loctite all the screws.
Well, actually adding a Kanban for our screws for our bolt was one of something I just did like a month ago because we had a box of like 50, and this is for holding our soft jaws onto the vise.
Right.
In my head when I bought them, it's like we use 4. They're not really consumable.
Right.
Well, it turns out they are consumable if you're making tens of thousands of parts, right? Like every time you tighten it, the I don't know, eventually like the head isn't as crisp. So and actually the failure mode has been that eventually they snap.
Okay.
And then you're like, it's not a huge deal, but you're like spending 5-10 minutes trying to get this thing out of your $4,000 air vise. And yeah, so now we just sort of proactively change them. We have a Kanban. But yeah, the cost of like, we run into this, we go into a shop where we're talking to them about Arda or just about Kanban. And they kind of start listing off like, oh, well, this vendor is really unpredictable, right? So we always need to call them. So we never really know what to have. And if they have a lot, sometimes we'll order it just proactively. And I'm kind of like, okay, like time out. Keep doing that. Yeah. Like keep find a new vendor, but keep doing that.
Right.
But everything else in the shop, there's no need to bring the same level of rigor and like attention and time. And so I think it is a really powerful thing in business, actually, to instead of like focusing on exceptions, focus, like I suspect that someone who's really good at business and also like reading the E-Myth, this is what it's all about, mm-hmm. right? It's like, what system can we establish that actually takes care of 90%? And like, we'll work on the 10% separately. We might just cut it out of our business. Oh yeah, that's a no quote for us because it doesn't fit in our really slick system. Or like one thing we've seen also is like sometimes shops that implement Arda after like 6 months, we go back and ask them like, how did you deal with that thing you were sort of talking about? And they're like, oh yeah, we just stopped offering.
Right.
Like they used to offer three versions of X, Y, and Z and realized that the cost of having them was higher than just like giving everyone the really nice one and sort of charging them less for it. Or like there's so many, like just once you see how easy it can be, like you're saying, like there's no point in skimping on stock if you can save 25 minutes and like really increase your confidence of a successful program by just sticking to the system.
Into your Mighty Bites. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a similar problem with Toolpath, actually. It's, you know, people want to try out Toolpath and they immediately grab the hardest, most gnarly part they can imagine and they drop it in Toolpath. And like, sometimes we do okay there and sometimes it's outside our capability and it like forces us to always, it's like a, an arms race, right? Like the better I get, the harder the parts I'm going to drop in there. But, I want to be like, no, man, like, not every part, I mean, some shops, that's true. They only take hard stuff, but not every part you make is that hard. Let's take the 80% of parts that aren't that hard off your plate.
100%.
And like help you quote those faster and program them faster. And then that like that extra set that you say, like either charge more for it or no quote it. We haven't figured out how to, I mean, some people naturally are just going to throw the hardest thing at it they can because they want to see what this AI thing is all about. But it's a weird parallel there for sure.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is, but I think like that's how my brain works anyway. Like someone brings up an idea, even in just like a meeting or like brainstorming session, it takes a lot of effort to not be like, oh, well, that won't work because of X.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And like in brainstorming, you're sort of meant to be like, no bad ideas. Let's just throw a bunch of stuff up on the wall. But even in that context, it's so easy to be like, oh, no, that like that's out of budget or that one is going to take too long. I don't know.
We've all spent our whole lives getting attacked. So now all we do is attack everything. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Or getting rewarded for like sometimes in a meeting, like whoever. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird dynamics. Yeah. Anyway, here we are.
So what I've learned here is that like you can take Kanban to the lowest common denominator at like every step, right? Like if I don't know what my minimum order quantity should be, or if I've never heard that term or what minimum lot size is or whatever, I just leave it off the card, right? Like all I need is the name of the thing. And like, if I don't want to put a picture on, I don't put a picture on. If I don't want to do a QR code, I don't do a QR code. And you can incrementally add that stuff in as you go. So I'll make the card as simple as I can. If I don't want to do a two-bin system, great. If I do, there's lots of options. I could use baggies or the note card separator. We don't have to like reinvent our entire shop just to implement Kanban. Like implement Kanban now and then reinvent your shop later when that becomes the bottleneck.
In all the free time you have from implementing Kanban,
right.
You can organize your shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then don't look for Kanban to solve the hardest problem in your shop. Have it solve the easiest problem. Wouldn't it be great if I never, ever, ever ran out of toilet paper again? And it wasn't something that I had to pay attention to on my way out the door of the shop on Thursday afternoon when I'm late for picking up my kid from soccer. So common denominator. Yeah, it's an important – I had never thought about it that way.
I think that's right. And all the advice, like, I feel like we should hire you for marketing. You know, your messaging, I have my head so far, you know, like just been in it too long and talk about the theory and everyone's eyes glaze over. So yeah, that's essentially it. I would just, the one thing I would say is we have been very unsuccessful with that last piece of saying, you know, start with your janitorial product. Yeah, and okay. I think that's because you should be like people in sales always say like sell a painkiller, not a vitamin.
Right.
Right. We've found the best success with companies who run out of stuff that literally ships to the customer.
Got it.
We've found the second tier success with, and this is like job shops, where we are making sure they don't run out of stuff that immediately acts on the stuff that goes in the box and ships to a customer. But the further you get removed from it, and for some reason, even though like minutes saved in your day are minutes saved in your day, it doesn't matter where they come from, right? But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are like, start with your janitorial products and learn there. I have yet to see a shop care enough to put the time in to actually do that. So I think find the things that bug you. Like for you, right? The push was, oh shit, I just ran out of N mills and I'm about to do a live demo.
Right.
Like that was the push. It wasn't like, oh, I'm wasting 30 minutes running to the store for toilet paper. So that last piece, I would say start with what bugs you and like the thing that you hate running out of or the thing you ran out of today. Just put a card in there. It doesn't need to be right. From our free Kanban generator. It can literally just be a thing you write on a card. Just tuck it in, rubber band it to your minimum, tape it to your minimum, do whatever, like start dirty. And then over time, it's just going to get better and better. And all the minutes you're saving across the shop, you know, you can kind of roll back into improvements.
I have to admit, I had never thought of just having people in the shop like handwrite a note card that could then later be turned like by the ordering person turned into an official card.
So this is a really exciting, actually, development from literally 12 hours ago. We built a feature in Arda where you can put a QR code on the wall, scan it, and people on the shop floor can like, you know, request items to be added in. Mm-hmm. No one was using it.
Right.
Right. And so... actually, my co-founder is visiting one of our best customers, and he was looking at it, and the guy was like, well, it would be awesome if we could include a photo. And he's like, oh, we can totally do that. So now it's just like you snap a photo of the item, which of course has better information. Right. You know, like the front of a box of screws from McMaster Car, right. Like has all, you know, you don't want just like a quarter 20 socket head. It's like, well, what coding do you want? What all that stuff. So now it's just a photo. So people on the shop floor don't necessarily need to. Yeah. But everyone just like make dumb cards, start really simple. Yeah. I think you're right on.
Okay. I honestly feel like ready to push Arda out or push Kanban out to my shop, and I'm going to give Arda a try. I actually admit that I started rolling my own cards, before I knew
that's
your,
awesome.
Your free card generator, but also cause I wanted them to be small.
And yeah, I didn't think yeah.
about just folding them in half before I laminated them, which I think sounds a little cheesy, but like legitimately, this was a blocker for me. It was like I want to do Arda, but I feel like I'm not doing it right, and I don't have time to like. I actually read a lot on Agile, which came from Toyota Production System. Most software developers actually don't know that our software development ethos like was born in like the early 2000s out of a group of guys who knew about the Toyota Production System. But I haven't yet made the time to like go back one level there to like learn about the manufacturing roots of that. And so I was like, I don't know how to do this right. So this was like supremely helpful for me.
That's awesome.
Since I'm apparently your new marketing person, I think you should like put a checklist and like somehow condense this into like 60 seconds for rules of Arda in your shop. And like a PDF and a QR code to a YouTube video. And that like, this is the absolute minimum you need to do. Sharpies on a card. Mm. Here's a box you need, put it on the wall. Don't put anything on there other than the name and a picture. I mean, whatever you think the rules are, but like, just like how low can we get this friction? Because like, that would have helped me tremendously in the moment. Because
that's awesome feedback.
Yeah. If I was 60 seconds away from everything I needed to know to get started with Kanban and Arda, like, that would have gotten me over this hump, which then later took me like days of like, well, I want to design the perfect card and I don't know about this tube-in system thing. And I hadn't thought about like, oh, cut a hole in a baggie and put it on a jug, right? Like How much information can you, and you got to balance it, obviously, if you give too much, but like, I feel like there's a 60 seconds to Arda to commercial in there.
That's super helpful. I'm going to, make some content around that.
Cool. Well, I'll give you the last word. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find Arda and try out the Kanban maker and everything?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. So www.arda.cards is our domain. I think ardacards.com goes to the same place. And there's a free Kanban generator, so you can easily make cards. And then there's the full product, which we need to save you about 3 hours across the shop per month for that to pay for itself. If you're interested, check it out. I'm also on LinkedIn. Instagram is a great place to kind of learn more about like the nitty gritty. I show videos of us implementing Arda in our shop. But really, I can't stress this enough, like just start with index cards. You don't need any tools. That said, the free card generator is kind of nice. Always happy to chat.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ariel.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.